Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello. Welcome back. I'm Thomas Dinas, your host, and this is the Delicious Legacy Podcast, an archaeogastronomical adventure through space and time. A podcast where we explore the flavors and tastes of the past and searching for ancient recipes all over the world. First of all, I would like to thank you all for listening to the podcast, as we are now 100 episodes deep into our exploration. And especially I want to thank my Patreon backers for all the support all these years. And today I would like to say thanks to Steve Cartwright and Ryan Dom for the support. And welcome also Ian Swordsman, Tracy Marcotte, Diana B, and Emilia in our Patreon page. So if you listen to this episode, guys, you are amazing. And so, for today's very special episode, I have swapped episodes with a dear friend of mine, the ancient history hound, Neil, who's been one of the first people I started following on Twitter as The Delicious Legacy back all the way back in November 2019. And I've been listening to his podcast and his tweets about ancient Greece and Rome for many years now, even before that. So Neil has a podcast called Ancient History Hound, and we decided a few months ago to do an episode swap, where he will feature in his podcast, in his timeline, one of my episodes, and I'll do the same for one of his. And for this week, I've decided, or we decided, that the best thing to do is to have an episode about Haloa, which is an ancient Greek festival, an ancient Athenian festival as such, happening midwinter. And what's better time than talk about this right now? Because it was happening roughly around December, January time. You'll find everything, of course, from Neil in the episode following. So yeah, you can listen to Neil's podcast everywhere. You get your podcast from Spotify and Apple and Pocket Cast and so on. And he's also on Twitter as Ancient Blogger. And he has a website called ancientblogger.com. He's also on TikTok, Instagram, so if you like what you listen, and I think you will, give him a follow. Yeah, in ancient Greece, as we know, it was a scattered world, consisting of about roughly a thousand Hellenic cities all over the Mediterranean. And as such, there was not one unified calendar, nor one unified celebration of gods and harvest and so on. So every city had its own way of doing things. And as such, this one, Haloa, it's been more centered around Attica, the region of Athens, where Athens resides. So without further ado, let's go and check what Neil has to say.
Hello to listeners of the Delicious Legacy podcast. My name's Neil, and I'm the creator and host of the Ancient History Hound podcast. A while back, Thomas suggested we swap episodes, and so here I am. I'm all about ancient history, and though I mainly focus on ancient Greece and Rome, I also cover other cultures, such as the Mesopotamians. In terms of what I talk about, well, there's a lot of variation. For example, here are some episodes from this year, and they've included topics such as Roman campaigns in Scotland, the Helots of Sparta, how democracy started in Athens, Hannibal, Greeks in southern Italy, and bees and honey in ancient Egypt, Mesopotamia, and Greece. Oh, and the annual Night of the Livy Dead Halloween special, where I look into the spookier side of antiquity. As for me, I studied ancient history at uni and did a part-time master's in it many, many years ago, and my ancient history website, ancientblogger.com, and this podcast have been a way for me to keep in touch with a subject I simply adore. Just so you know, you can find me elsewhere. I'm on X or Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram as Ancient Blogger, where I post and share ancient history content. My podcast episodes are aimed at all levels of understanding, and the content is clean, no swearing. Some of the topics I cover may not be for younger ears. For example, I did a couple on human sacrifice in ancient Greece, Rome, and other cultures, and there was an earlier episode on STIs in antiquity. That aside, I always include warnings if there's something in the episode which might require it. When it came to choosing the episode I wanted to share, ideally I wanted something with food at its heart, and so immediately I thought of the honey episode I did recently. However, given the time of year, I thought, why not something on a Greek festival called the Hallowa? It's also a bit of a shorter episode, so you can get a good taste, pun intended, of what I'm all about. The Hallowa was a fascinating festival, and not one you might have heard about. It involved an all-night feast where drinking was encouraged, as well as obscenities, which was a theme that even carried across to what the women ate. Oh yeah, by the way, this was an all-women festival. So I hope you enjoy this, and again, if you want to come and subscribe, follow, or just say hi, please do. But more importantly, thanks for giving me a chance. Around 11 miles northwest of Athens lies the famed sanctuary of Demeter at Eleusis. It was a hugely important place and famous for hosting the Eleusinian Mysteries. This was a secret religious initiation which was held each year in the autumn. As you might expect, the main deity involved here was Demeter, alongside her daughter Persephone. And it was here that the Hallowa was celebrated. This was a festival held in the Attic month of Poseidon. Yeah, he had a month named after him. But to be clear, this was the Attic calendar, which related to Athens and Attica, the region around it which Athens controlled. There was no universal standard calendar in ancient Greece, and other regions had their own calendars. But we know that the month of Poseidon tracked roughly with December and January. There's even a specific date given for it, the 26th, but it's quite tricky to align calendars exactly. The Attic calendar was synced to the new moon, which changes. So if it was late in the month, then it could be anywhere from late December through to early January on our calendar. And in a way, it's not that important. What is important, though, is that this festival took place in the depth of winter, and this, as you will hear, was why it happened at all. Another key ingredient was the goddess Demeter, as it was a festival in honour of her. As you might know, Demeter was a goddess of agriculture, and this was a crucial element of life. In fact, in many ways, it was life. A town or city could only be as important as the agriculture which supported it, and in the modern world we can easily forget this link. A bad or good harvest was literal life or death. The Hallowa was a festival specifically linked to Demeter, as you'll hear, and to a specific incident in her myth. This is an old one. Much of the detail is held in a Homeric hymn to Demeter, which dates to the 7th or 6th centuries BC. And to understand the Hallowa, we need to understand the associated myth of Demeter and the specific incident I mentioned. I'll start with the abduction of Persephone, something you've probably heard about. She was Demeter's daughter, and she was abducted by Hades, and that meant she was taken to the underworld. When Demeter found out, she went into a sort of, well, exile. She travelled to Eleusis and assumed the form of an old woman. It was here she sat by a well and was spotted by some noblewomen who took her to the palace at Eleusis. Here the goddess, still in disguise, sat on a stool, despondent. However, a woman called Iambe approached her and made some jokes. These worked, and Demeter was cheered up, albeit temporarily.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, that's one version. In a later version, Iambe was replaced by a character called Borbo. And instead of jokes, Borbo just flashed herself at the goddess, which got the same reaction, laughter. Borbo is present elsewhere in Greek culture and often linked to female genitalia. And this feels like an extreme contrast. On one hand, you've got jokes, and on the other hand, you've got, well, indecent exposure. However, it's not that much of a contrast if those jokes were considered indecent, as Diodorus Siculus, a historian of the 1st century BC, noted. The consensus was then that Iambe got the reaction she did from some very risque material. Bad language aside, something else which does track from the incident to the festival was that it was an all-woman affair. This wasn't unusual. The Thesmophoria was a big festival for Demeter and also permitted only women. Where the Hallowa may have been different was that it was open to all women from all backgrounds, and this included hetairai, or prostitutes. All of these women mixed during an all-night feast of partying, drinking, and bad language, and I'll get to that in a moment. Before that, I'll try and build a sequence of events and flesh out what happened. The festival kicked off with a sacrifice overseen by a priestess, not a priest, and this is in fact referenced by a speech in the 4th century BC by an orator and all-round Macedonian nemesis, Demosthenes. He spoke about an individual called Archias, who was punished for two things. The first, sacrificing to Demeter on the day of the festival with the wrong kind of offering, and the second, being a man who was doing the sacrificing. The likely location for the sacrifice was a building called the Ascara, and it's probable that this took place in the middle of the afternoon, and I make this assumption based on how long it might take the woman to assemble at the sanctuary. Presumably, they'd have travelled from across Attica, but it's likely many would have come from Athens or via it. And this would make sense. Athens was linked to Eleusis via a road called the Sacred Way. This was used mainly for a procession to it during the Eleusinian Mysteries, but it was presumably used at other times just to get there. The Sacred Way measured 22 kilometres or 13 miles, and it might take anywhere between 3 and 5 hours to get there, depending on how fit or able you were to make that journey. By the time many of the women got to Eleusis, it could be early afternoon. But they then needed to be marshalled and get into place for the sacrifice, which would have involved offerings such as agricultural produce and cakes. It didn't involve animals. Having the sacrifice around this time would also allow the next stage to be thoroughly prepared for. This was the Panicus, the all-night feast, and you wouldn't want everyone waiting around too long. It would be dark soon, so the women needed to get to where this feast was most likely held, a building in the sanctuary called the Telesterion. This was a large hall which was colonnaded, meaning that there were columns inside it, 42 in fact, and they supported the roof. The Telesterion measured approximately 52 by 54 metres, and this building had seen many phases of construction, and by the mid-5th century BC had 8 rows of steps cut from rock on each side. Perhaps there was additional seating, because one estimate has the Telesterion as a venue supporting 3,000 people. That's not saying that this was how many women attended, by the way. There's no real way of knowing that kind of number, but it's worth knowing just to give a cap. And it's here that things started to escalate. Amongst the wine and food, women were encouraged to use rude and coarse language, perhaps tell the odd vulgar joke. All this whilst nibbling on a pastry shaped in the form of male or female genitalia. Yeah, they had those as well. And perhaps this is why the hetairai were allowed to mix, the idea being that thematically they aligned well with this. We even have a record of 2 hetairai falling out at the Halawa. Well, in a way we do. The account of the dispute comes in the form of a series of letters written by Alciphron. These were presumably fictional letters, perhaps inspired by real instances, but not written by hetairai. Unfortunately, that would be incredible on so many levels if we had something like that. We know very little about Alciphron, so we can't actually even date them. The letter in question gave an account of a falling out between Euxippe and Thais, the letter apparently written by Thais to a friend. It all started when Euxippe mocked Thais for losing a lover, and then started on her hair and makeup. In the letter, Thais commented to her friend that Euxippe must have been on hard times, as presumably she couldn't afford a mirror, given the state of her own makeup. By now you might have worked out the rationale for all this shameful talk, rude jokes and that kind of a thing, namely the link to that incident with Demeter and the rude jokes. This type of language had a specific name, aporeta, and it wasn't just found at the Halawa. At the Stenia and Thesmophoria festivals, both held earlier in the year, women engaged in what has been called ritual obscenity, or aporeta. Both these festivals were in observance to Demeter and linked to the sowing or ploughing of the fields. It wasn't all based in Attica, though. In Arcadia, Demeter had a festival which included both men and women. On the third day, men left. In fact, anything male, even dogs, were made to leave. The women had their own mysteries overnight, and when the men returned, the two groups mocked and jeered each other, presumably using bad language. At Apidaurus, 2 choruses of women abused each other at a festival for Damia and Auxesia, local variants of Demeter and Persephone. So why the need for aporeta exactly? Well, it's argued that aporeta had a function of encouraging agricultural fertility. Where aporeta had cajoled a despondent Demeter into laughter, so too the fields in the depths of winter could be roused into action, and this would ensure crops grew during this time. It's important to note that this point in the year was pivotal for agriculture. Crops had been sown and growth was underway. If the crops didn't continue growing properly at this point, the knock-on effect could be a poor harvest in the spring. The idea of rousing the fields into action in deep midwinter could be seen in another important element of the Halawa, fire. The accounts of the sanctuary for the year 329-328 BC recorded that 67 talents weight of firewood was needed for the festival. One estimate puts this at 5,360 pounds, or 2,431 kilograms of firewood. There's been a bit of speculation about what this was used for, as you might imagine. The most likely, though, is for fires and perhaps a bonfire. How the Halawa got its name has been debated. It can be translated as threshing floor, which is where wheat was separated from the chaff. But this would have been done months earlier. Perhaps the sacred threshing floor was where a large bonfire was built. Alternatively, perhaps this was where dances were held. There are references to the contest at the Hallowa. Presumably, anything in the dark and involving very drunk individuals rules out the more traditional sporting contests. So why not dancing or choruses? It would have been cold and dark, so what better way to keep the feast going throughout the night than a big fire with other fires nearby, and dancing and singing? The light and heat, as well as being practical, could be seen as a further way to invigorate the fields and urge good growth. Though we don't have much information about the Hallowa, it seems to link in with other festivals associated with Demeter and women, which relates to agricultural fertility. There was the Thesmophoria, which was celebrated at the time of sowing the fields, as I mentioned earlier. If we think of the two working together, then we have the Hallowa at that crucial time and working to ensure that the crops grew and that the harvest in the spring would be good. It must also have had a really positive effect on those participating. Hangovers aside, it allowed the women there some license to dance, drink and talk, perhaps even make new friends or learn a new shocking joke or two. And moving to the modern day, if this gives you a few ideas of how to freshen up Boxing Day or just do something completely different, who am I to argue? You can mark it down as cultural. And that brings me to the end of the minisode on the Hallowa. I hope you've enjoyed it, and if you want to get in touch with me, just come say hi. And if you want to email me, you can do that as well. I'm ancientblogger@hotmail.com. Until next time, take care and keep safe.
And that's it for today. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast, and I will have new episode for you coming very soon. And rate and review wherever you get your podcast from. I hope you enjoyed our little festival of the obscene and the festival in honor of Demeter. And remember, you can subscribe on Patreon from $3 a month and get the podcasts early and ad-free. Additionally, you get extra content with special recipes, some bonus episodes, and of course, any other musing that comes into my head. Thanks for listening. I've been Thomas Dinas, and this was the Delicious Legacy Podcast.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.